And now it's my distinct pleasure to present the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy to the captain of the Columbus crew, Guillermo Barros Escaloto.
Of the 2008 MLS Super Draft, the Los Angeles football craft select from the University of Akron.
This happened in Argentina, maybe people died. Someone could die, you know?
If they took Nuevo Chicago and they were moving it to Rosario. Yeah.
Still a chance for a fourth goal here. Affle drives forward. Affle scores! What a goal! It is amazing! King Harrison grabs the crown in second half stoppage time!
Hey buddies, it's the Massive Report brought to you by our great dear friends at the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street. It's a 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and of course, a hashtag dope porch. Head to oldnortharcade.com for more information. We're recording this episode here on Monday, the 26th, I believe, for reference for those of you listening later in the week. I'm Bart. Joining us this week, we've got Patrick Murphy. Pat, how are you doing, sir? All right. Sounds great.
I'm good. I'm good.
Wow.
Sorry. Mute button was getting away from me there.
Already just a minute of terrific podcasting that you have come to know and expect from us here at the Massive Report. We've also got Ralph Schudel. Ralph, how are you doing, sir?
It's nice to be back after a long hiatus for life getting in the way, and then coming back from the NCAA women's basketball tournament. So it's nice to be back talking soccer with you guys, and I'm really happy to get to work today.
Absolutely. Hey, shout out Go Lady Cox playing right now. Of course, by the time you listen to this, they'll already punch their ticket to the Final Four, but I digress. And then closing out with us, we've got Alex Stanek. Alex, how are you doing, sir?
I'm not happy to be back. I'm just kidding. It's going well. Everything's good. A little bit pissed that we invited Ralph back, but otherwise, everything's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, we all pretty much
What did I do?
It was just a joke.
You're just the resident punching bag.
Yeah, exactly.
I am big enough to be a punching bag. I am a big punching bag. Well, just come on, I'll give you a hug on Saturday. It's fine.
Yeah, big cuddly punching bag. Well, we do have, you know, speaking of punching bags, DC United. We got that to talk about later today. a big win. Maybe not a big win, but an important win against DC United. For Columbus Crew last weekend. You want to take care of good teams, take care of business against bad teams, and that's what they did. We'll talk and break down that 3-1 victory at Mafre Stadium, a chilly game with our panel here. And, look at what that means 4 weeks into the season. Look at some of the performances from that game. Some players, you know, that were thrust into the spotlight with some of the notable absences, Will Trapp and Zach Steffen, and guys that, you know, really stepped up in those absences to keep Crew undefeated this season, and undefeated going back to August of last year in the regular season. So we will recap that one. I'll look at some of the other results from around MLS, as well as some of the on the field, or rather stadium, news for Columbus and the attendance and in that game, as well as some of the attendance issues I think that we've seen throughout MLS through these first 4 weeks. We will also take some of your massive questions from the masses, and then finally end it as we always do, previewing the upcoming game. This week, Crew playing the Vancouver Whitecaps, led by a certain lesser Kamara, and so we'll get to that. But first, let's take it back, hit rewind back to last Saturday. Chilly 6 o'clock start in Mafre Stadium for Columbus, but the weather didn't seem to be an issue too much on the field as Crew took care of business, Pat Murphy.
They did indeed. I think the first maybe 10-ish minutes were not exactly what everyone wanted. DC came out and pressed pretty high and caused some issues. I mean, you know, just about 2 minutes in, ball back to John Kempen, and DC has two guys running at him, and you know, he just kind of kicks it away. But knowing that there's an inexperienced goalkeeper, a central midfielder who's not used to playing with this club in Ricardo Clark, despite the fact that he's a veteran of the league, DC wanted to press early, but Columbus figured it out pretty quickly, started to build out of the back like they normally do after about 10 minutes or so, and 20 minutes in, Columbus was up 1-0. It was a nice little interchange, and if you haven't already read it, our Colin Johnson did a good job on the goal breakdown, the anatomy of the goal piece. He used that goal today, so I recommend checking that out. But a good interplay between Arthur with a back heel finds Christian Martinez, who, despite being, you know, having a defender pretty tight on him, plays a good ball back across the box to Milton Valenzuela, who did a very good job of recognizing the opportunity. And I think, to take a minute and talk about this, it was something that Greg Berhalter talked about all week, that the team didn't get enough numbers forward into the box. He wanted the fullbacks to be more a part of that game, especially when, you know, the attack is coming down the far side. And Milton recognized that opportunity. He's, you know, sneaks into the box, is open the entire time it's on the right-hand side, and is there to collect, and then a pretty good finish. Had to kind of collect it based on, after his first touch, but, you know, puts it home. A few minutes later, 10 minutes later to be exact, DC came level. It was a mistake at the back by Lalas Abubakar, who went up for a header, misjudged it a little bit, flicked it off the back of his head. Acosta chased down the ball. Columbus is all pulled out of shape. He finds Assad at the top of the box. Assad curls a ball into the net. Some would argue that John Kempen might have been able to do more there, but you know, I think the bigger issue is that there wasn't anyone on Assad. He had so much time to take that shot, and you know, while that is a bit of a concern, I think when you have a Will Trapp in there, that is taken care of. But Columbus respond quickly again 10 minutes later off of a Federico Higuain corner. Ricardo Clark heads home what eventually would become the game winner. And that goal was important because Federico Higuain's 50th assist, which puts him into the 50-50 club. He's the sixth player in MLS history to register 50 goals and 50 assists with one club, so pretty special moment there. And then 2 minutes later, Federico Higuain helps again, getting springing Christian Martinez down the wing. Martinez takes on a defender and finds Pedro Santos at the back post. He scores his first goal. Milton's goal was also his first, so a game of firsts really for a lot of these guys, first starts. But the second half, I think, is something we should talk about, because unlike the Montreal game that we saw a couple weeks ago, this was a really good performance of controlling a game with a lead and not letting a team get back in it. I mean, DC, partially because of the press, I think, but also just because of the way Columbus possessed the ball, were just, you know, gassed by about the 70th minute. I mean, Ricardo Clark at one point had a ball played out of the back to him where he just had time to turn and stand and probably could have just stood there and run out the clock if he'd really want to. But, you know, just, I mean, DC and DC had their fair share of guys gone too, played some young guys in the middle of midfield. So, you know, it wasn't DC's full strength lineup, but Columbus's performance was pretty impressive nonetheless.
Just two shots on target for DC, and Columbus with 55% of the possession, according to our friends at MLSsoccer.com, they're stat nerds. Columbus, for reference, 7 shots on target and 13 total thrown Allstad's way. But to your point, Pat, this is a team that we kind of alluded to it earlier. You want to see get them close out bad teams. And Ralph Alex, with a couple of big mainstays out of the lineup, Will Trapp, Zach Steffen, you look at the guys that, you know, came in their stead, and they really played well. I mean, this is what you brought Ricardo Clark in for.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the way I looked at this game was I was surprised by the old guys and the young guys. I thought Ricardo Clark had a pretty decent game, a much better game than I thought he was going to have. I thought he was going to be a liability. I thought that was going to be one of our big weak spots. I thought he did really well. I thought if anything we were risking card trouble with guys like Lawless, but other than that, I thought it was a pretty solid performance. And then the young guys, I thought Milton Valenzuela had another amazing performance. I think he's, you know, one of the top left backs in the league based on what we've seen so mm-hmm. far this season. And granted, it is really, really early. But yeah, I think he's looking like quite a player. And then Christian Martinez, who I've been kind of hyping or overhyping, depending on how you look at it, all season long, and a lot of last season as well. He's starting to really show what he can do. That kind of tenacity that I talked about preseason, he's really showing a lot of that. He's going at guys one-on-one. He's playing good passes, 2 assists this game. So he's showing like that he's not just, you know, a young player who's getting minutes. He's earned that spot right now. So I think a lot of good things going for this team right now. And hopefully we can keep it going. But yeah, really impressed with the depth on this team. When we get Will and Zach back, I think we'll be even stronger. But good showing so far, and you know, let's keep it rolling.
I want to circle back to Ricardo Clark for a second, and I want to kind of go after Alex a little bit for this. Is, you know, I'm always a fan of the players out there that are older, kind of play. You know, they've accomplished a lot, and they have done a lot. You know, you look at Ricardo Clark, he was a U.S. international, did fairly well for the Dynamo, had a very historically significant career for the Dynamo. I was excited to see him play. I like older midfielders like a Michael Carrick type, or dare I say Steven Gerrard. I know that name around MLS is a little bit mm-hmm. kind of taboo of sorts, but, you know, think Gerrard maybe before he left.
He didn't get a red card the second he came on, though. That wasn't very Gerrard-like.
Exactly. But, you know, Ricardo Clark is... I've missed a midfield boss like Tony Chani, and I know Tony's out in Brigia doing big things, and I know he was seen widely as kind of more of the offensive number sixes, I guess, even if you want to call him a six. But I've missed a physical presence back there, and the thing is that Ricardo Clark, still at the tender age of 35... has something to give to this league. And I think for a midfielder like Artur or like a Will Trapp, even having that presence around in the locker room is huge.
I think having that presence around, and it looked like, you know, I think we forget that, and I think it was someone who brought it up last week. Will Trapp started every game for this team last year. And, you know, obviously he's got the injury history. Knock on wood, that won't become a problem in the future. But if he plays well against Paraguay, this could be, you know, this U.S. men's national team. These fixtures could become an issue. And so you want to find that guy that you can trust in your lineup to fill in for Will Trapp. I think, you know, probably says a little bit about what Mohamed Abu, or how he's viewed, not as someone who can maybe fill in that number six role, at least with Will Trapp out of there. But to get Ricardo Clark in there, and again, in a system that relies so heavily on the number six, that center midfielder, I think he put on a pretty strong performance, and to get his head on that ball. Like Ricardo Clark, he's not that 6'3", 6'4", you know, behemoth that is Tony Chani. He's you know, bigger than Will Trapp, but Will Trapp's a little pixie, so that's not saying too much.
Well, the thing is, too, that I like about Ricardo Clark is you can look at it, and this is how I view things, and I'm sure Murph will probably poke a hole in this theory.
Probably.
But you get Clark on there, he gives a good solid 70 minutes, and then, and I know Crew SC fans are going to sit out there and tell me that I'm out of my mind, so feel free to tweet me if you'd like, but you come in
Ralph
with
Shudell.
At Shudell underscore Shudell. Ralph, actually.
Shudell underscore Ralph, my bad, sorry guys.
But,
direct all vitriol to that one.
Exactly. Or Massive Report, I still see it either way. But, so you get Clark in there, he gives you a solid 70 minutes, and then you bring Abu on, kind of in a mop-up spot duty role, maybe for the last 20. But, you know, that way you could kind of limit Abu's time necessarily on the field, but still make him feel like he's getting minutes and still make him feel like he's a valued member of the team.
I think you're right. And I say that with a lot of pain in my heart. just kidding. But, no, I think that's exactly what they wanted to do, you know. Get Ricardo in there. He's a veteran of this league. you know, he obviously doesn't play the position the same way Will does. In fact, a lot of the game, though they were kind of interchanging, Artur was the one dropping in behind, dropping in with the center backs. And if you look at the goal, it was Ricardo who was back there, but they were coming, the United goal, but they were, you know, all racing back to try and get back because of the way the play happened. But I thought, you know, for the most part, Ricardo played well. I thought early on he looked a little nervy. There was that giveaway he had that led to a chance early in the match that Kempen had to come out and make the save. But once he settled in and I think, you know, got comfortable, he was good. And we saw in the preseason, you know, he can play in the center of the park still for this team. You know, I don't think he's a guy that if you needed, you know, 10 games in a row of him, you know, going 90 minutes, he could do anymore. But, he's a guy who can give you something. And, you know, I think you saw that on Saturday. And while I do think that it doesn't speak very highly of Mohamed Abu, I do think that, you know, he still has a role to play with this team. You and I were talking before the game, Bart, about the, you know, international slot that he takes. And obviously that's a pretty important spot. You know, shouldn't that guy be pushing for a starting spot when, especially when you have an absence there? And, you know, I think if Artur goes down, maybe they use him in that position more. My biggest thought with Abu is when you're playing a team that, you know, allows you to have a little bit more time on the ball, he seems to do better. In that New York City series last year, he struggled when they put pressure on. But, you know, I don't think we've seen the last of Mohamed Abu. I think that, you know, he still certainly has a role to play, even though he didn't start in this game.
And you know, I don't think there's any question that Zach Steffen will be, you know, taking back that number one shirt, albeit he wears number 23, the second he's back from his tour of duty with the U.S. men's national team. But all in all, for, you know, a player in John Kempen, which, again, in this system is not very easy on goalkeepers, obviously the goal, maybe you would have liked to see a little bit more, but you give a guy like that, Yamil Assad, a talented player, that much time, that much space. You know, even if Kempen had reacted, I think he's doesn't have a chance at getting at the end of that ball. But otherwise, a pretty solid performance, and credit to the back four in front of him on making sure he didn't have to do too much work.
Go ahead, Ralph.
So the thing with Kempen, though, I remember to the particular point in the preseason when Crew SC signed Kempen, and I was screaming the praises in the Massive Report Slack channel, saying that this was a great signing, this was going to be great, and Murph was like, hold on, pump the brakes, this isn't, you know, it's a backup goalie, get, you know.
He's played 14 total games, now 15.
I know, but I liked a lot of what Kempen did, and in the second half, I kind of meandered towards the back of the net, kind of the Crew SC attack side close to the stage, to listen to him talk to the defense, and he wasn't shy about it. And as a goalkeeper myself, to listen to a goalie not be tentative in discussing plans with their defense, and he wasn't shy, you know, even though he's a second string goalie, he was out there yelling at Jonathan, he was yelling at Josh, kind of establishing command of his back line and making sure that there was uniformity across the whole way. Now, Assad's a great goal scorer. There's no shame in giving up a goal to Yamil Assad. You saw what he could do with Atlanta United last year. I think it's only a matter of time until DC breaks through, honestly. I just think they're a little bit down on their luck right now. But I think he had a great game, and I think he kept the defense in reasonable order like we saw in the whole entire second half.
I thought he had a decent game. I don't know if I'd say anything beyond that. But for a backup goalkeeper, I mean, he did what he was supposed to do. I didn't think that he made a case for anything more than a backup goalkeeper. So, I mean, it's one of those situations where, yeah, I mean, he did his job. But he's a solid backup goalkeeper. I think he's going to do well if we do lose Steffen to international duty or for other reasons. I think he'll be okay. But he didn't. His positioning, I thought, was pretty decent for the most part. But his reaction times, reflexes, things like that, I don't know. He didn't impress me to a large degree, but maybe we're all spoiled by Stefan at this point, so who knows?
I think that's probably, you know, a fair thing, because we're looking at Zach Steffen. That's the best goalkeeper in MLS, in my personal opinion. And again, I think, honestly, though, when you look at it, I can't tell you a time when I think Crew SC's had as strong depth at the goalkeeper position as they have right now. When you look at Zach Steffen, a guy who, you know, albeit he's not necessarily, you know, 15 starts, but there aren't too many backup goalkeepers with a great deal of MLS starts under their belt either. And you look at Ketterer, Lundgaard, the guy they drafted in the first round last year. You've got some depth at this position, better probably than I can think of a time for Crew SC, and then unless you're maybe going back to the Will Hesmer, Andy Grunbaum days.
Maybe Tom Prestis, John Bush, if we want to go way back. Yeah, but I agree. I think, you know, watching John and Logan in practice last week, because we were, you know, preparing for this game, knew one of them was going to start, I was impressed with both. I think, you know, at least the you know, end of practice that we get to watch, they're usually doing team stuff by then. I think both of them have shown that they can play at this level. I know we haven't gotten to see Logan quite yet in a real game. He did play against FC Cincinnati yesterday in a rather forgettable performance by the entire team, but he did well, I thought. I mean, he led in 4 goals. Columbus lost 4-2, but you know, it was a reserve team for the Crew, and you know, Cincinnati played their first team guys in the second half, which is when they really poured stuff on. And I don't think Logan was at fault or anything for any of those goals. So I think if and when, and I assume we're going more towards when, Zach gets called in for international duty, you know, you've got two guys that can play. And I would be willing to venture a guess that, you know, it's not just going to be John Kempin's job as the backup goalkeeper. I would venture to say that Logan's going to push him. And, you know, if they need a backup to step in again, you might see Logan, and you might even see him on the bench sometimes. So I don't think this is at all settled for the backup spot. I think they're going to push each other throughout the year.
Well, speaking of pushing, Columbus, a handful of players pushing their way into the starting 11 for the MLS for the league this week. 3 players, Frederico Higuain, Christian Martinez, and Milton Valenzuela, all named in the starting 11. Pedro Sanch on the bench, and of course Greg Berhalter on the sideline. So lots of Crew players in that starting 11, and I really don't think, especially given some of the people that we have here on this podcast, cough, Alex Stanek, that we haven't talked enough about that Christian Martinez performance. If somebody wants to maybe weigh in on the Super Saiyan like performance there from that bleach blonde Panamanian.
Is this my turn? You guys want me to do this, or does somebody else want to do it?
I think he is actually Panamanian, though.
Okay. You're contractually required to go here, Alex.
All right. So I'm going to repeat a lot of the stuff I've been repeating, but I love the kid's tenacity. I just love the energy he brings every single game. I've said this before. He plays as if someone is controlling him from the stands with an Xbox controller on FIFA and just holding down the sprint button the entire time. He just brings a lot of energy to the game in a positive way. I know sometimes people have kind of criticized him for rash challenges and things like that. Doesn't bug me too much as long as he doesn't get sent off, which he hasn't so far. But I really just love the energy, the kind of enthusiasm that he brings. I like the fact that he's willing to go one-on-one. He seems confident. He doesn't really shy away from anything, any aspect of the game, which for a young player, especially kind of a smaller guy, I think is really impressive. And I just like what I see from him. Every week I see a little bit more. The runs that he makes, he made a run, I think it was in the second half, and Pipa didn't play the ball to him, but he had kind of beat his man and made this perfect run when Pipa had the ball. And Pipa played it to a different guy. I think he played it to, I forget who he played it to in the center of the park, but he didn't go out to the wing. But just things like that where he's starting to kind of get in rhythm with the players on the team. I think the players are going to get in the rhythm with him more. Two assists, you can't complain about that. And you know, I really, really like what I've seen. And honestly, I mean, if you would have slotted him in playing the way he's playing now last season over Pedro Santos, I would not have been upset. I think he's doing that well. So hopefully he can continue to develop. I think we've seen a lot of development from a lot of young players on this team by Greg Berhalter. So I think he's kind of next in line. He's going to kind of be developing the way that maybe we saw Justin Merrim develop last, you know, 4 or 5 years. And hopefully we can see him continue to expand his repertoire, I guess. So hopefully, fingers crossed, he's going to keep making great performances.
I thought this was interesting because, you know, he obviously gets the two assists. He obviously, you know, makes team of the week, but I don't think this is his best game this year. I think he played better at Toronto without, you know, the statistics, which I think is a positive sign for him. You know, you can have not your best game. Still a good game. I thought he played well, and I agree with what Alex said. But, you know, play not your best game, come out of it with a career-high 2 assists, and make MLS Team of the Week and all that. So impressive from him. I think the thing that I've noticed in these two home games is that he's doing the little things more than he ever was, I think, when he was coming off the bench. And simple stuff just like, you know, receiving the ball and making the easy pass instead of, you know, trying to go forward all the time, just kind of picking his opportunities to do those things. I think when you're coming off the bench, you're trying to, you know, prove that you deserve to be in the 18. You're trying to make something happen. And right now, I think he's comfortable. He knows he's got a spot. He knows he's performing at a high level. So he's not, you know, having to press so much when he's on the field, which is good to see. And then the other thing is, you know, he started on the right side, which he started on the left side, I'm sorry, and Pedro started the game on the right side, and then they switched. You know, for the first goal he was on the right, for the second goal he was on the left. So it was good to see that he's, you know, comfortable playing on both sides, able to get an assist from either side. I really like teams, and I know Greg Berhalter's done this some in the past, that can switch those wingers. I think it keeps the defense a little off balance, and we know Pedro can do that, obviously, but if Christian's proving that he can be comfortable on either side, I think that gives Columbus an advantage in terms of the wingers.
Not only that, and he was very close to getting a goal there, too, in the 59th minute, had a really nice shot on target, one of the better saves from Onstad right before Crew put that one. I think it was Zardes off the woodwork and down. So that and that, you know, again goes to the point of this team's ability to close out a bad DC United team as well. But I do want to, you know, look back at the wingback Milton Valenzuela, 19-year-old kid. I mean, when we're talking about young kids, you know, starting to blossom in this season, I mean, this kid has 4 MLS games under his belt and has a goal and assisted on the first goal of the season, and now has a goal from in the box at a left back. And remember, this was a player that before the start of the season, Greg Berhalter said, yeah, I think the offense is there, but we need to give it some time because he's never produced much offensively. I think, Ralph, you were saying before the start that he hadn't scored a goal as a professional, albeit he's 19 years old. He's only, you know, got 2-3 seasons of professional soccer under his belt, but gets a very important and a good, you know, pretty clinical, smart finish from a left back in the first half.
Well, Bart, what were you doing at 19 years old? Because I wasn't doing the stuff Milton Valenzuela's doing on the pitch.
I am not at liberty to speak about any of that.
But, you know, you look at this kid, and I don't have a bad thing to say about him. This guy, I first got a look at him in the Carolina Challenge Cup against Minnesota United. And when we had the first mention of a young DP, I was sitting around going, you know, what's a young DP? We're making MLS rules up again, which isn't a shocker. Yes. But I looked at this kid, and I have to pinch myself at times because I often forget that he's 19 years old because he plays so much better than a 19-year-old. His instincts are fantastic. He knows when to push forward. He knows when to fall back. We haven't really seen him get burnt much. Actually, at all, with the exception of the Montreal game. I believe he got turned around on the Piatti goal. But he is just so technically sound for such a young age. I can't believe how well this kid has, much less come to a new country, adjusted to a new climate, getting kind of bombarded with a trial by fire of Major League Soccer with how physical this league can be, and frankly how unpretty the brand of, and the style of football could be as well. But it's just to see him adjust and fill in for a Yuka Raitala or a Wayland Francis and plug him into this system, and to see him succeed so early when he popped that goal in the back of the net, I was thrilled and elated for him.
It was interesting after the game. We're in the locker room and we're talking to Pipa, and I look over and Greg walks over to Milton and, like, you know, puts his arms on his shoulders and is like, "You remember when we talked and you said you wanted to be more offensive?" And, you know, I couldn't hear what Milton said, but he nodded, and Greg was like, you see? And then they started talking in Spanish, which was interesting because I'd never seen Greg speak Spanish before. But, like, it was just a cool moment. And, you know, I know that when they were, you know, attempting to not necessarily recruit Milton, but, you know, make this happen, they sat him down and showed him, and they've done this with guys before, but showed him the way they play, showed him how, you know, guys like Wayland Francis and some other left backs have performed in this offense and just kind of in this team, I guess, and how, you know, they envisioned him fitting into it. And, you know, as Ralph said, and Bart, you too, you know, it's just incredible that four games in, he's doing as well as he has. You know, again, 19 years old. Like Ralph said, you can't say enough about how talented this kid is. We talked last week about, you know, Zach Steffen and where he'll end up, and, you know, potentially playing with house money in terms of how long he's here. But you know, if Milton stays healthy and continues to perform at this level, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if teams come calling after the season, maybe even during the season. You know, hopefully for the Crew, he'll hang around for a little bit. But this kid's certainly got talent. He's a guy that's already on the radar of the Argentinian national team. So, you know, they've found a good one, it looks like, here.
For context, Yuka Raitala, 20 and goals, assists, obviously don't tell the whole story about a defender, but Yuka Raitala in 20 starts last year, 2 assists, a goal and an assist through 4 starts for the 19-year-old Milton Valenzuela so far this year. And again, the idea that we are talking, albeit maybe a little delusional, but not that delusional, not more, pretty par for the course in terms of the delusion from this podcast, but about a 19-year-old MLSer being a Argentina national team call-up potentially in the future, that says a lot. That says more about, I think, any, you know, MLS signing or anything like that about how far the league has come. Wow.
Yeah, and good on Greg for, you know, going down there and finding a guy. Obviously, they needed a left back after Yuka was taken in the expansion draft, and they didn't bring back Waylon. So, you know, that was something we talked about throughout the offseason, you know, fans and on Matt's report about, you know, left back being kind of a priority signing. And, you know, they only signed one guy to fill that position, and it looks as if they hit the nail right on the head.
Well, not to, you know, be a buzzkill, but I think we do still have to look at things in context a little bit as well, too, with the win specifically. That win brings Crew up to first place, tied with New York City FC for top of the Eastern Conference and Supporters Shield standings with 10 points through 4 games. Crew, both of them with a +5 goal differential each, has given up 3 goals and scored 8. Only New York Red Bulls have a better goal differential across MLS. But this is a DC team that was terrible last season, and they were bottom of the MLS standings, I believe, out of all. Let me quick make sure that Galaxy, they were tied, I believe, with the Galaxy in points.
Yes.
For lowest. So a pretty terrible team And a team that, while improved, while they added a guy like Emile Assad, you know, this is still a team that's not especially good, still a ways away, I think, from competing. So does this say more about Crew, or this win say more about this Crew team? Are they that good? Is this DC team just that bad?
I'm going to circle back to that initial statement about delusion on this podcast. So maybe some of y'all out there will call me slightly delusional. But like I said earlier in the show, I feel like DC United is very close to figuring it out. They have the right pieces in place. Darren Maddox has been really good. He's been one of their top goal scorers along with Assad. They've got great building blocks. So you could build around Maddox, you could build around Assad, and then Luciano Acosta they could really build around as well. Now, a lot of their international players, I'm going to be frank with you guys, I don't know much about the ones that they were missing, but they were missing somewhere in the neighborhood of between 8 and 10 players, I believe, before the start of the game. I think their defense is in shambles. They need to figure out, they need to get two steady center backs back there. They were missing Tyler Kemp back there, who is one of the rocks generally on the right side for them. De Leon's a decent player. Definitely nothing to, you know, sit on, you know, necessarily, just kind of, he's a great MLSer. But, you know, it's a good team. They have David Ustad between the pipes. He's a solid goalkeeper, but a goalkeeper can only do so much when his defense is getting pulled apart and getting shattered. And, you know, it's, you can't put the responsibility square on the goalkeeper. It's got to be the other 10 players on the field.
Absolutely, this is a DC team that, you know, has had had its share of share of issues the last couple of years, and it probably doesn't help that right now that they don't have a home to play in.
No, I think that is certainly going to make things interesting throughout the season. You know, they're only playing two games in the, you know, DC area. Already did one. That DeMarcus Beasley was not pleased with the conditions of, and then they play the Crew actually in a few weeks at Navy's football stadium. So other than that, they're playing road games until I think it's late June, might be July, when they open the new Audi Field, which from everything I've heard is supposed to be pretty awesome. But in terms of the question, you know, I disagree with Ralph to some extent. I don't think DC's that good. I think they do have some nice pieces. I don't think Ben Olsen's a great coach. You know, he's had a long time to get this team going somewhere and you know, has made a few playoff appearances and whatnot, but for the most part, they've been a pretty bad team. And
think of what Crew Twitter would do if Ben Olsen was coach of Columbus. They're still trying to fire Greg Berhalter.
Murph, is he on the hot seat if he doesn't do well this year, do you think?
I would have thought he was on the hot seat previously, but they have stuck with him. So, you know, I mean, it's hard because he's such, you know, a revered figure there for his time as a player. So, you know, I imagine for people, DC fans and whatnot, it's kind of a weird situation to be in. But from the Crew perspective, I think this is a good team, and I think we all agree on that. I think how good is what we're still trying to figure out a little bit. You know, you look at the first half of the season, and they should rack up a good amount of wins. Not that they traditionally have good starts, but it's the easier, at least on paper, based on, you know, looking at the team's schedule. And I think that, you know, they've so far done what we expected them to. Going to Toronto, obviously, and getting a 2-0 win was not expected. But other than that, you know, I do think this is a good team, but I'm still not ready to say, you know, this is a team that might contend for the top of the East or their supporter shield quite yet. But I am very impressed. And I think if you continue to build on this, and especially if people gain confidence through the first half of the season, then if you do go into a tougher second half of the season, you've got that kind of wind at your sails, and you can maybe use that to help push through some of the more difficult stretches you're going to face.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Murph. I think we have a very good team, but I think how good in terms of, you know, are we Supporter Shield contenders? Are we MLS Cup contenders? Things like that. I think it's way too early to say. the weird thing about MLS is teams can kind of rise and fall significantly over the course of a season, where you don't see that as much in other leagues. But depending on, you know, what we do with the Justin Merrim money that we're still sitting on, for example, that could play an impact. How other teams reinforce in the summer could play an impact. We're just going to have to wait and see. And also this whole Save the Crew, Austin relocation stuff could play an impact. We still don't know how that's going to impact things, how that's going to impact the fans, the atmosphere, how it's going to impact the players. So I think there are way too many question marks to say, oh, yeah, we are a top contender yet. But I do think we have a very solid team. I think the team's fixed a lot of the problems that historically it's had, particularly defensive weakness. Weakness in the defensive midfield, I think, has also improved a lot. And just kind of all getting all of the players on the same page with the system. They seem to be backing themselves really well. Lawless Abubakar seems to be really fitting in that center back role. Our defense seems to be much more of a cohesive unit, where last year or the year before, at times, maybe it seemed like, okay, the guys aren't on the same page. So I think we fixed a lot of the problems, but it's still, you know, we can't say definitively that, oh, yeah, this is a really great team yet.
A thing that I think is a great motivator for this team, gentlemen, and, you know, maybe you guys can attest to this, is spite. There's no better motivator than spite. That bulletin board material. This team, I believe Grant Wall tweeted it, or somebody from SI tweeted it at the start of the year, that nobody picked Columbus Crew SC to make the playoffs this year, or something to the effect of being decent at the East. With the relocation talk, with nobody necessarily picking this team to accomplish enough, you know, to be noteworthy in 2018, it's really exciting. And you have to think that these guys are out there playing for the city, playing for those 8,000 plus fans that were in the stands on Saturday. They were super hyped. They were super excited. I just think that these guys have that extra motivation. I'm not going to say that they're going to sit there and win a championship, but they definitely are pulling from a special place. Maybe that same place that Loyola Chicago is pulling from, with the help from Sister Jean in the NCAA tournament.
And I think that, you know, we brought up the 8,000, that 8,400 something that were there, according to the MLS attendance numbers. And I, you know, I think that's something that that we should dwell on a little bit more. I think 8,000, you know, 400, whatever it was they found last, it's probably fair for the number of folks there. And it seems pretty clear that they're going with literal attendance, and, you know, maybe literal from when they when the kickoff starts. And of course, we've spoken at length here about the some of the pre-game security gate shenanigans, chicanery, perhaps, that has been apparent since the Anthony Precourt made his announcement last October. Do we think that played a role? Do we think it's the scheduling more so? This was a miserable game. It at least didn't rain. It looked like it was going to rain and or snow all week. Instead, we just didn't see the sun. But that's Ohio in March, and you know that's what Ohio in March is going to be like, and that's why in most cases, in most seasons, you see Crew try to avoid as many home games as they possibly can in this month, and instead we've got three. So what do we think? What do we think we might see this weekend, and what do we think is fair to expect from Columbus Crew supporters from the attendance front?
I have a few thoughts on this. I think the first one, you know, you mentioned, Bart, the weather, and you know, having these many home games. The reasoning behind that, and a lot of teams are dealing with it, and I'm sure people on Twitter saw, you know, New York's attendance, Red Bull's attendance, and New England's attendance, and the pictures and comparisons and whatnot. But the reasoning this is happening is because of DC and the weird schedule, and the Eastern Conference teams are having to play, you know, some extra home games early to accommodate them. So that's unfortunate, just because of the timing of everything with the PSV move and the Save the Crew stuff and whatnot. So I think that should be put out there. But in terms of the attendance, I think for the first time possibly ever, for a team that isn't consistently selling out their numbers or their stadium, you're getting numbers that are pretty accurate in terms of people that are attending the games. You know, season tickets are down. I think, you know, though we don't get actual numbers from the team, that's safe to assume for this year. And so you're not getting that boost of people that have already paid for their tickets. And potentially they're not counting those that don't show up to the game anyway. But, you know, it's an unfortunate like combination. And the question you asked, Bart, about what we should expect, I think it's going to be hard to judge that exactly for a little while, because I do think that a casual fan, if this team is good, you know, come June, say, and the weather's nice and whatnot, you know, people that aren't as, you know, invested emotionally in, I'm not giving my money to Anthony Precourt, or I'm going to support this team one way or the other, you know, those people might still come out to a game on a Saturday evening because it's nice out and the team's winning and they don't really know all that much about it. You know, I think there are some people that are still surprised that the team's here because they heard about this last, you know, fall and assumed that the team would leave right away because that's how these moves usually work. Yep. But, you know, so they might lose some on that. So I'm going to be very interested to see, you know, come that. I'll even be interested to see this weekend. You know, you've got, and we'll touch on Vancouver more, but you've got a good Vancouver team coming to town. It looks like it's going to be a nice day. I mean, we're still 5 days out, but right now on my phone, it says it's going to be 56 and 14% chance of rain, so partly sunny. So you might get to see some more of those people that don't usually show up, start to show up end of March. You know, you hope for better weather. So I'll be interested to see this week, but, you know, I don't really know what's fair to expect until I have a little bit bigger sample size on this whole thing.
So I've got a couple thoughts on this, and we were having a discussion downstairs. Sam and I were with a couple of the other photojournalists. And the thing with the team right now, obviously, is the climate that we're all very familiar with, is that obviously with the pending move, it is a little bit difficult to attract a casual fan in there. And I can speak from my personal perspective, and maybe you can touch on this here in a second, Alex, is that a lot of folks that I talk to say, I'm not going to give Anthony Precourt any money by supporting the team, coming in, paying for parking, and doing everything that is basically entails a game day, you know, going to the concession stands and whatnot. Let's kind of stop that thinking right now, because the thing is, sure, in a way, are you giving him money? In a way, yes. But for the most part, you're paying for the staff. You're paying for the concession workers that are there, the people that are running security. You're doing all the stuff. Heck, you might even be paying for a couple of the on-the-field players' checks, essentially. But you have to bite the bullet, and you have to support this team if you want to save this team and get people in here. The thing is that traditionally, cold weather games never sell well. You look at New England. You look at the Red Bulls. I'm trying to think of a couple of the other games. Even down in Houston.
Dallas poorly attended.
It's technically cold for them down there, even though it would be lovely for us up here.
Well, and real quick, Ralph, I think you look at them, but then people are seeing the attendance number. You know, not people who are paying close attention, but people that, you know, are outside of Columbus maybe that are criticizing Crew fans, or, you know, people in Columbus that don't pay attention to it are seeing 8,443 for the Crew, but 15,000 announced for the Red Bulls. And, you know, if you look at it, it's about the same size crowd, maybe a little bit more.
That's that we don't have apples to apples.
Right.
I think
that's... And that's what I wanted to make the point. Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, and the thing about the city of Columbus, guys, is they respect winners. This team is going to draw better in October or November with a deep playoff run. Everybody's going to be talking about it, and they're going to draw a great gate. They're going to get more people in there. But Columbus in general, and you can thank the big university in the center of town, they show up for winners, and they appreciate winning. For the longest time with Blue Jackets not doing well, you had dedicated fans. They were getting a solid gate, but until they really started turning things around, and you look even at their most recent win streak with, I believe it's 10 games in a row, that they weren't
They lost doing... on Saturday to my St. Louis Blues.
So, you know, the thing is that you look at teams that try to, you know, do things like, you know, they market Ohio State sells itself. The Blue Jackets, though, I can't walk down
the street. Ohio State basketball team for the last 4 years. I mean, that didn't sell itself.
Well, even Murph, I mean, you can even say Holtman had a press conference earlier this year, I think, where they had 9,000, and people were asking if that was a big thing, and he sat back and said, we have to be our biggest advertisers to the people that spend their hard-earned money to get their butts in the seats.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Ohio State basketball, even you go back to the heydays under Thad Matta and Greg Oden and those teams that were really good, you know, there were people there for sure, and there was a decent atmosphere in the shot, but it doesn't always sell out, even when the team's really good, you know, and you know, and this is part of the problem in general in this market and in other markets in MLS. You know, you're a college football town, and you know, people are going to then decide what to do with their money aside from that. And whether that's sporting events, whether that's taking their family to the zoo, whether that's, you know, whatever the case may be, you have to give them a reason to come to your event. And that either is either that you're marketing the heck out of it and everyone knows that it's happening and it's all over the place, which, you know, the crew has done in the past to some degree, is not doing it right now. I think we can all agree. And or you have to be good enough that people learn of this team, you know, because everyone's talking about it, because, you know, they're one of the top teams in MLS and they're making a run.
The thing that drives me nuts, and I'll get off the soapbox and let other folks get into it too, is that actually maybe it's two thoughts. Number one, the thing that drove me crazy was the marketing of international soccer superstars when they came to Columbus, as opposed to selling people on the Ethan Finleys or the Justin Mirams of the world. Let's look at New York City FC when they came back a few years ago. It drove me postal that the marketing department was advertising for Andrea Pirlo, David Villa, and Frank Lampard. And I said, I don't understand why. Let's get our players in there. But that's name recognition. That's going to get people in through the gate because they're going to say, hey, I watched Lampard on Saturday mornings play for Chelsea. I watched Villa play for Barcelona with Lionel Messi. You know, and they get with these teams, and Pirlo even playing for AC Milan. You're welcome, Alex. But the other thing too that drives me absolutely up a wall is the statements from the ownership group saying that they are doing targeted marketing and they're advertising to people that would already be at the games. It's yep. just it doesn't
I've
make
gotten
sense.
Plenty of promoted Instagram and Twitter posts, guys.
And
I've
that's
got
the thing.
Tickets, but
and that's where, you know, companies like Facebook and Twitter make their money is through these targeting advertisements. But the big thing is you're going to catch fish with a big net or a small net. It's just how big is the net that you're going to cast. You know, if you're going after the targeted audience that's already going to be there, you're going to catch people, but it's not going to be as big of the, like Murph was saying, it's not going to be as big as drawing in the casual family that wants to come in because it's 56 degrees outside, it's really warm in the sunshine, and oh, the hot dogs are really great at the concession stand too. You've got to give people a compelling reason. In Major League Soccer as a whole, and Columbus Crew SC, I'm throwing the whole league into this, needs to get off of this elitist standpoint where we can't have promotions, we can't have these really great kind of, dare I say, minor league giveaways like the Clippers do, and get people in the door. If they had a dime a dog night at Crew Stadium, I could guarantee you the stands would be packed.
Or like a dollar beer night?
Oh.
That's a good idea, Crew Marketing. You can thank me. I just came up with that.
That'll be in our front office shills check this week.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, I also think Major League Soccer needs to consider the fact that they are a minor league team in a lot of ways. And I love the Crew. I've loved the Crew since I was 8 years old. But I never considered the Crew one of the top teams in the world. I never considered MLS one of the top leagues in the world. And it's a global game with global competition. And they need to find ways to bring people into stadiums rather than seeing a superior product in a lot of ways on television from around the world. And so that's a challenge that they have to deal with. But I'm not sure that's at the heart of what's going on in Columbus right now. I personally know a lot of friends, a lot of fans in Nordeca who have stopped going to games entirely, not because they don't love the team or not because they don't like the promotions, but because they do not want to give Anthony Precourt money while he is attempting to move the team. I've had it described to me like people, I've had people tell me, you know, it feels like I'm being cheated on right now. I mean, people feel like they are in love with the Columbus Crew, and the Columbus Crew is cheating on them with another group of people. And then that person who's cheating on them is simultaneously saying, hey, I need money, give me money. You know, and for a lot of people, that's a tough sell. I mean, a lot of people say, no, screw you. You know, you're doing this thing, this bad thing to me. Why would I do this nice thing for you? Why would I help you when I can just watch it on television or watch it at a bar or boycott the team entirely until there's new ownership? And that's not a strategy that I support. I am a season ticket holder. I'm a proud season ticket holder. I have been a season ticket holder for years and years. And I want to be there for every moment that this team is here, whether that's one more year or 10 more years or you know, until the day I die. I don't want Anthony Precourt or Don Garber or anyone else to get to steal memories from me that I would have made just because I want to try to spite them. They're going to get plenty of money from other people. And, you know, my $300 is not going to make or break them. So me personally, I would encourage everyone to go to games. I think it's important that you be there for yourself, even if not for the team or for anyone else. You know, be there for you, because this may be the last year, and you might 20 years from now be like, you know what? I really wish I got to see that final team. I really wish I got to be there for those games. And I don't think you're going to say, man, I really wish I didn't give Precourt that $250, you know? So that's my take. But at the same time, I'm not going to criticize anyone for not going. You know, this is a tough, difficult situation for everybody. And it's a decision everybody's going to have to make on their own. But I think most people around the league who are serious followers of Major League Soccer understand what's going on. I've seen a lot of tweets saying, oh, Columbus gets a pass, things like that. So I don't think we're going to get beaten over the head with these attendance statistics by serious followers. I think it's the casual people who maybe are going to be a little more skeptical of what's going on here. But yeah, don't even do it for the attendance numbers. Don't even do it because, you know, we want to try to make a point to other people. Do it for you. Like, if you're a fan, don't rob yourself of those memories just to hurt Anthony Precourt, because you're going to hurt yourself way more than you're ever going to hurt him. He's going to be fine. So hopefully I'll see you guys next weekend.
No, and absolutely. And I do want to, and I agree with everything that you just said, Alex, because I think that is, you know, our personal is right as a lot of people are, I think, to want to boycott. I mean, we talk about how this team's marketed or the lack thereof. And one of the things, while they may not market players, individual players a lot, you know what they do market? The supporter culture. And that's what makes it just even more infuriating. I know it's not necessarily a new thing, and that the team has owned the Nordeca trademark for some time, but boy, to see them selling Nordec scarves at Cruz Stadium for $30 a pop, you know, MLS license, that kind of stuff, it's pretty surreal. When at the same time they're saying, you know, hey, you supporters and all this, you're good enough to for us to make money off of, but not good enough for us to stay. And then, I mean, we can get into some of the promotions. I think there are drawbacks and pros and cons to each of them. I do think they devalue the product a little bit in the minds of casual fans when you suddenly, you know, start releasing or doing a whole bunch of buy one, get one frees. I think that, so I do understand that to an extent, why they might sort of avoid that when they can. But for them to market so much on the supporter culture, and it's not just Crew, it's MLS as a whole, you know, the whole community, star and all that stuff, and to just show how brazen they are in that means absolutely nothing. The only thing they care about it is however much money they can get out of it.
Well, and I also think it is worth mentioning that there are a lot of people who have jobs in Major League Soccer designing things like gear and things like that, that are completely opposed to this move, but still have to do their jobs and do things like this. I am, you know, I know a handful of people who work in for Major League Soccer, and everyone has kind of reached out to me publicly in some capacity and said, hey, you know, this sucks. I hate this. Just FYI, just so you know. And that seems to kind of be the really kind of overall opinion of people who follow American soccer. That this is kind of being directed by a handful of old men who are very wealthy, who think this is a good thing for their pocketbooks. And they're doing it in opposition to literally everyone else who has a say and a stake in things. It's my personal opinion that they're not going to be successful at the end of the day. One thing I thought was really interesting was after the game this weekend, Alex Fisher, who is the head of the Columbus Partnership and one of the people who's been heading up the effort to save the Crew here in Columbus, tweeted out, congrats Columbus Crew SC for a great game. To all the fans at Save the Crew, keep the faith for our team and city. Keep the faith. I like that a lot. So hopefully we can do that. Hopefully we can keep the faith. Hopefully we can save the Crew. But yeah, until then, we're going to see a lot of things like this with the kind of the merch and the different attempts to kind of sell stuff to people. But try to keep in mind that it's some, you know, 20-something who's just doing their job. It doesn't really have any say or stake in the broader scheme to move the team. But I think we're going to save the Crew. So I think in the end, this is all not going to matter as much. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Remember, direct the vitriol, not at the Crew Twitter, although sometimes they do seem a little bit tone deaf, but no, it's all at Anthony Precourt, Dave Greeley, and Don Garber. Looking a little bit elsewhere around the league, we obviously have the game coming up here to preview, and actually we'll get into a couple of questions from fans that we got. Either you, and if you've got questions that you want, well, you're a little bit late now, but you can tweet us as you're listening to this, and we might get to it next week. Use the hashtag MRPod, or just add us at Massive Report. You can also submit those questions via Facebook at facebook.com/Massive Report. But we do have a couple questions from fans. We've got one here from Nordekian here. And this is maybe getting a little bit far ahead, but they're asking about Gaston Sorrow, a guy that we haven't touched on too much, not certainly in this show, but what it will look like when he's back in. What will be the Crew situation at the center back position? You've got Lalas Abubakar, who looked like he's kind of carved out a starting spot for him himself, while Josh Williams has been rehabbing to start the season. Of course, we know that Alex Crenali right now in Orange County, but what does it look like when and if Gaston Sorrow is cleared to play?
Well, just a quick update on Gaston. While we were watching the game against the scrimmage against Cincinnati, him and Mike Grella were working on the other field. And that was the first time I'd seen him do much with the ball, which was a good sign. And they were doing some cutting and whatnot. And obviously they're both coming back from knee injuries. So to see them doing some hard cutting and running and stuff with the ball, though Mike was doing more with the ball than Gaston, is a good sign. So, you know, hopefully he'll be able to get back into full training and whatnot soon. But as for what I expect once he is back, you know, I know they're not going to rush him. So I imagine he's gonna work his way back into training, and then they're gonna kind of go from there. Both in terms of, you know, his fitness and whatnot, and then just kind of how he fits. I mean, obviously he's been out of the game now for you know, well over a year, almost 2 years by the middle of the summer. So you know, it's gonna be interesting to see how long it takes him to kind of get that all back. But I think it'll be interesting to see what happens at center back on Saturday, because Lalas Abubakar was pulled at halftime. You know, Greg said it had to do with them being concerned about a second yellow, but it's not as if he played a great first half. I thought Josh Williams was solid coming in. And as you mentioned, Bart, Alex Crenali being on loan, you know, he's kind of out of the mix for now, but they could bring him back at any time. So I think, you know, once you get Gaston back in there, you have a solid group with, you know, I didn't mention Jonathan Mensah. And then it's just going to be, in my mind, about, you know, who's playing the best and maybe a little bit of matchups too. You know, if you're playing a team with a bigger striker or whatnot, you want two taller center backs, you can match up that way if Gaston's healthy and fully fit and whatnot.
Staying on the back line, we've got a question here from Matt on Facebook. And we touched on this a little bit, but let's have some people go out on some limbs. Even with the small sample size, where does Milton Valenzuela rank in the all-time crew left backs?
Oh my gosh, okay. Yeah, well, it's way too early of a sample size to kind of say anything, but I think he's far below Jed Zehner, I think, for sure. No, in all seriousness, though, Gino Padula, in my opinion, best left back.
Did you just reference Jed Zehner?
Dude, I did. We haven't referenced Jed Zehner on a Massive Report podcast in probably 3 or 4 years.
That's good.
And so I
Ralph, title this the Jed Zehner podcast.
No, I'm going with the initial one we were talking. Well, maybe. The Jed Zehner experience.
He was a good guy.
He
but
was.
In all seriousness,
from Indiana.
Gino, and I, to be honest with you, I don't think Valenzuela is going to be here long enough to come close to matching the impact Gino had on this team and on this city. He's still involved in the Columbus community here. He helps. Well, he's the director, I guess, of a SP Soccer Academy, Sporting Padula Soccer Academy, and they're one of kind of the driving forces of developing young talent here in Central Ohio. So for his contributions on and off the field, I don't think Milton will ever come close to that. Mostly because I think he's going to be here 2-3 years tops if he keeps up the pace he's on. I think we're going to sell him abroad and cash in. So I think it's going to stay Gino.
Gino only played 3 seasons.
He's a legend. He's a legend, and he stayed involved in the community in a real major capacity in terms of developing young talent. And I think that the Columbus soccer community is, you know, blessed to have someone like that stay here. You know, he started it with Guillermo, and then Guillermo kind of never was involved in it to a large extent. It was kind of Gino's baby. And then finally Gino just took it over full time, and he's been running that for I don't even know how many years now, but
it's been since he retired, I think.
But I mean, you're starting to see kids come through that system, and I think that's great to see, and tremendous contribution that we should all be thankful for. So for me, 3 seasons or no seasons, Gino's the man.
So it's funny you mention that, because there's a story that Sam told me this weekend about him and Guillermo being in Sam's basement when they were trying to get the SP soccer program started. So if anybody out there ever wants to put a bug in Sam's ear and have him tell you a great story about Gino Padula and Guillermo being in his basement about the SP soccer academy, go ahead and do that. So really, honestly, and I'm not saying this to be silly, it is a very riveting story.
And I think, you know, to your point, I wasn't really trying to, you know, poke holes or anything in what you'd said, Alex. I think it... I do agree with you too. For me, it's always going to be Gino Padula, at least his title to lose. But I think it says that much about the effect that he had on this team that even when he's only there for really, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page, only 56 appearances over those 3 seasons. And yet he left such a indelible mark with the franchise. I think, you know, most of the guys, and probably by nature of the fact that they won that championship in 2008 and then, of course, followed up in 2009 with another supporter shield, you know, one of the best runs of most MLS teams, most dominant performances over that 2008-2009 seasons. That really cements them, but that you don't realize, wow, that was such a short little burst, albeit a mighty one.
Well, one more thing on Gino. I think, and maybe this is just me, but I think this is a sentiment that's shared by a lot of people in Columbus and in Ohio in general to a large extent. Ohio has never been really one of the most glamorous places in the world for people to live. And I think when you have people who really kind of embrace Ohio and embrace Columbus. Fans kind of gravitate towards those people. And not only in soccer, but in all sports. I think you see it with Ohio football teams and Ohio, you know, the Cavs in basketball and baseball teams as well. You know, when you see someone who's kind of, who kind of puts down roots in your city, in Ohio, it makes you kind of become endeared to that person in a big way. And Gino's done that. I mean, Gino's made Columbus home. Gino didn't have to do that. I think to a certain extent, people like Federico Higuain for a similar reason. I think he's kind of always been very positive on this city, always said nice things about this city. Didn't have to, you know, he could have just done a job and moved on at the end of it. But Gino's really kind of decided, you know, I like Columbus. I want to stay here and I want to give back to the community. And so, you know, we're lucky to have him. He's a great guy. If you ever have a chance to meet him, he is a genuinely great guy. He was probably the first crew player that I actually had a substantial conversation with. And it was at Fado of all places. And he didn't have to take the time to talk to me. I was just a kid. But I talked to him for probably 5 or 10 minutes and yeah, a fantastic, fantastic guy. Number one left back for me.
And hands down, those crew teams, best hair on the wing backs ever in MLS. I mean, between Frankie and Gino, those locks just flowing as they were bursting up the sidelines. It was a thing to see.
Oh, absolutely. And we talk a lot about, you know, the best hair in MLS. Lalas Abubakar, some of the best center back hair in the league right now, but you're talking two all-time greats on the left and the right-hand side in Gino and Frankie. That was a magical time. Great, great time.
For a future podcast, all hair crew team. I'm going to put that birdie in the ear.
And oh my gosh.
We'll get back to that for, well, once crew are on like a break or something, all-star weekend, something like that, we'll go and talk about the all crew hair team.
So we got Gino. Let's just go through this real quick. Dom Oduro is either on best or worst. I'm not sure. Steven Lenhart, Gino, Frankie. Who else we have? Let's just rattle off some names.
Steve Clark.
I got to go with Grunbaum, man. I got to go with Grunbaum.
Get out of here with that.
Steven Lenhart.
Yeah, I said Steven Lenhart. Who else do we have?
I've got his last name, apparently.
I'm really trying to think about
Giassi.
Giassi's got pretty good hair.
This is a good one. We'll have to.
Bye week. Tweet us.
Yep.
At Massive Report, hashtag MRPod, your suggestions for contenders for the best hair 11. If we haven't named them already, you know, give us your ideas.
Absolutely. Again, in that hashtag MR Pod or the Mr. Pod. I know we had a question from another tweeter earlier whether it was pronounced MR Pod, Mr. Pod. I prefer Mr. Pod, technically MR Pod. We've got one more question that we are going to quick get to, and it's maybe not directly. I'm going to paraphrase a little bit. And it's about the players' union, and Matt Lampson in particular is the one mentioned. What they'll take if you think that MLS will take the players' union will take a position on the proposed location in Austin. The toxic dump site is his McCalla Place is his question, but I want to step back a little bit and ask whether you think we'll see any statement from players' union, especially as maybe we're getting closer toward the end of the season, if an official announcement has not been made, and especially going into those collective bargaining negotiations, whether the Players Association, whether it's Matt or other individuals collectively will want to comment or weigh in on Save the Crew.
The thing I've heard from various people is that there are discussions going on between certain representatives of certain teams that I don't want to say necessarily right now, with the exception of Ethan Finley, I guess I'll say that one, because Ethan Finley came out vehemently against the move and was saying that, you know, Save the Crew was kind of the fire that he needed to kind of get something going. There has been talk from sources out there that is saying that the union perhaps, and this is talk, that they may file for a potential, how do I want to say this correctly? Because I don't want to say something stupid, which happens most of the time. But they want a hostile working conditions, I guess would be the best way I want to say that, for their Columbus counterparts, whether that would be former Crew players, i.e. Matt Lampson, Ethan Finley, potential current Crew players. I believe Will Trapp is the union rep for the Crew.
But there
is potential talk. That has died down. That was early on in the whole endeavor. I believe back in November was when I initially talked to a few sources who said that that was happening. But I haven't heard anything since. So if anybody else out there has heard anything else, chime in, please.
I would be surprised. I would be very surprised. I think that I don't think that there's the stomach for it right now. But you never know what's going to happen. But I would be very, very surprised if you saw the players' union take a stance one way or the other. They didn't take a stance in previous relocation, franchise folding type situations. I would be surprised if they took one now. I would love for them to do it. I would love for Will Trapp to make that an issue with the players' union. Do I think that Will is going to do that? I don't think so, but you never know.
Yeah, I mean, if you're ever going to, and if a player was ever going to, when he's the captain of a team, when he's the representative to the players' union, and, of course, when he's a Columbus native, you got to think if he's going to do it, he's going to do it. And if he's not, then he's not. We will see. But we do have we've been going on this for a while, so I do want to get us back on track toward the game coming up this weekend against the Vancouver Whitecaps. Vancouver among the top teams right now in the Western Conference, tied with Sporting Kansas City for the top points. They've got goal differential, though. They've actually conceded one more goal than they've given up. But they are up at 7 points through 4 games, 2 wins, a loss, and a draw. They had a scoreless draw with LA Galaxy last season, but Kai Kamara, of course, obviously the news earlier in the season when he scored his 100th career or MLS goal. But otherwise, this has been a Vancouver team that, you know, again, made some surprising moves. Tony Chani leaving. But they've found a way to compete so far this season, and could present a challenge for Columbus, especially Kai Kamara, motivated. You know he'll be. I think he loves playing the villain role right now to this Columbus fan base. It should be an interesting matchup. We've also got a couple of Crew players in Will Trapp and Zach Steffen that you have to question how much Greg Berhalter is going to want to trot them out there with a friendly coming up tomorrow night against Paraguay.
I'm really interested in this match. I think, you know, we talked earlier about kind of a barometer for the Crew in terms of, you know, where this team is, how much we can take from the opening games and whatnot. You know, I think Toronto was a team that was very focused on the Champions League and kind of let that one get away up there. Montreal, I don't think, is a great team and still was able to come back. And then we had the Philly game. And they dominate what I think is not a very good DC team. So I think this will be a good test. This is a Vancouver team that did well at the end of the season, made a good push to get into the playoffs, and you know, had a chance to finish, I think, first in the West on the final day of the regular season. Things didn't go their way, obviously. But yeah, I think this is a good team. I think they got better with Kai. Alphonso Davies, a young player, young Canadian player, who's pretty exciting. You know, they certainly have some pieces. So as you said, Bart, I think Kai will certainly be motivated. I looked it up. I think this would only be his second time coming back, played with New England here one time, and then another time he didn't play. So I think that was because of the birth of his kid. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I can imagine, even though it's been a while and I think that story's kind of faded, a guy like Kai is not going to let that go. I assume the fans will still give him some stuff, so to speak. But yeah, I think this will be a good test for the Crew to kind of get a sense. They're the home team, so obviously they should do well. But yeah, I'm interested.
I don't know about this one. I guess I don't know. Usually I like these games because there's the potential for Kai Kamara to disappoint, and I'm still salty about that. Well, let me correct myself. I was still salty about that, but my salt levels have fallen because of saltiness about other things going on right now. So I'm not even hyped up about, you know, taunting Kai or anything like that. I mean, maybe this is what it took for me to like put that in the past. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, Kai, you know what, it's whatever, right? So hopefully we do well. Hopefully we get a win. But nothing about this game is particularly interesting to me other than the fact that it's two good teams playing each other. So hopefully it'll be an entertaining game and hopefully we get 3 points. But for the first time since he left, I don't care about Kai Kamara.
The thing about this game, I'm actually really excited about this because I think I look in the mirror if I'm Columbus Crew SC and I look back and I see Vancouver staring back at me. If you want to insert a Michael Jackson Man in the Mirror reference, you're more than welcome to. But they've got two talented center backs in Jose Aja and Aaron Mond, if that's how you say it. And then I believe Felipe, the old master of the dark arts for New York Red Bulls, is sitting down there anchoring the midfield for him. And then Christian Teixeira and Alfonso Davies are great, but they're bench too. I'm looking at the bench. You've got Breck Shea, who can do pretty decent things off the bench. I mean, he's not the player that he once was, and for a very short time was for Stoke City. And then the other player I get really excited about when I look at Vancouver is the big midfielder, and I'm sad Sam isn't here, the Egyptian Ali Ghazal. He's very good, can be, you know, kind of a boss of midfield, and I liked watching him and Artur go at it last year, which I thought was very interesting. But I think it's going to be a good matchup. It's going to be a pound-for-pound kind of, you know, two heavyweight boxers going at it. I think it's going to be exciting. And for Kai, I think a lot of folks out there, particularly I had something come across my timeline the other day when Kai left that said, you know, something to the effect of, you live long enough to see yourself become, die a hero or become the villain. It was something to that effect. But yeah,
I think Kai made that one up.
Yeah, probably. on a live stream on Instagram. But you know, Crew SC are going to go for 5 unbeaten, which is really exciting. And like
14
I mentioned,
total.
Yeah,
14 total.
I forgot about that. But the thing with that is, and I mentioned that in the post game show with a few people. If you would have told me at the start of the year the Crew SC were going to start at 5 games unbeaten and, you know, 14 total dating back to last year, I would have told you you're nuts. But, yeah, it's exciting times to be at Moffray.
Ralph, real quick, as you listed those players, is there a player in the MLS that you don't think is good?
Mixed Discarude.
I'm not MLS. Sure he's in the MLS anymore.
He's with Manchester City. Yeah,
I just wanted to check. You seem to list a lot of good players.
I mean, I have respect for a lot of players. I mean, if we're really talking about people that I don't like, it'll be Jeff Larenowitz. And if I've got a gun to my head, Wondolowski, I still never forgive him. Retired. He missed his retirement.
to correct myself, this will be going for 15 in a row. The 14 was last week.
But and to answer the other question too, who else do I really?
You don't
not
actually
like?
Have to answer it. I mentioned it. I was just kidding.
Bart,
let's do predictions.
Absolutely. Hey, we will get to that. But for that, I do want to make a point, and I think it's, again, part of the sad, you know, the other tragedy of this entire Save the Crew and all this, in that we can't sit back and enjoy and bask in a team that is, you know, has 3 wins through 4 weeks, is undefeated since, as an astute Twitterer, I believe, pointed out, since the summer solstice, I think, or no, yeah, not was, some, not the summer solstice, the eclipse. Last
it was the
year.
San Jose game at San Jose that they last lost.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, back in August, of last year. That is a long time, and we haven't spent nearly enough time talking about it because Anthony Precourt is, I'm just going to stop there and say Patrick Murphy. What are your picks for this game?
As I said earlier, I do think this will be probably the biggest test for the team, given that Toronto was kind of focused on other things. I like what I've seen. I think that, you know, I do believe that, you know, you'll get Will Trapp and Zach Steffen back in there, even though they play tomorrow night. You know, I think you look at that as kind of a road Wednesday game, and you can still, you know, play your guy on Saturday. So I imagine those two will be back in. I'm going to go 2-1 Crew. No, I'm going to go 3-2 Crew. I think there's going to be a lot of goals. I think both of these teams can score and can concede. So 3-2.
3-2 from Patrick Murphy. Ralph, what do you got?
To answer Patrick's earlier question, Sasha Kleshchen's number one on my hit list. but anyway, now that I had time to think about it. But, yeah, you guys make a ton of great points. I think, you know, this is really a great test for Crew SC. Carl Robinson has Vancouver playing very well. I don't know enough about their goalkeeper, though, that replaced David Ustad. But, man, I could see this being a shootout. I'm going to go – I hate to echo it, but I'm going to go – let's go 3-3. I'm feeling six goals today. I'm feeling six goals. 3-3. Ooh. Shootout. We're going to go crazy.
3-3 from Ralph Schedell. And we got Alex. Alex, what are you thinking?
Well, I said 1-1 last week, and we won. So I'm just going to say 1-1 again, and I'm just going to keep doing that until we don't win. So I don't want to break anything. So 1-1.
I'm really glad we haven't had to call Falcao into service yet this year.
Yeah, he's not needed right now. I mean, heck, he's there. I've heard from sources that he's you know, willing to take a helicopter if necessary, but we haven't needed him yet. So we'll wait.
Once FIFA sues the Crew for not paying up for Pedro Sanch and we lose Sanch. No, actually, that's a reference. If those of you, you'll be listening now, might have heard or seen some of the reports about SC Braga potentially suing Crew. That's not the case. It's the previous team. And Sanch, as far as we know, Anthony Precourt's paid up for Sanch. So we'll see, have him for a while.
Basically, Braga has not paid the percentage that was supposed to go to his former club. But some reports got out there, lost in translation, that it was the Crew that hadn't paid, and that wasn't the case.
But for what it's worth, I've got, believe it or not, Crew winning. 4-0 is what I'm going to go with. I think Kai Kamara might put one off the woodwork, but in general, I think he's just going to be really, really frustrated, and we're going to see a lot of Kai throwing his arms up, complaining in the box when you've got King maybe running and setting up behind him for a header or something like that, like we saw last year. But I think that Jossie Zardes is going to get back on the board. I'm going to say a brace for Jossie. I think Christian Martinez finally finds the back of the net. And I think we're going to get
Zach Steffen.
Zach Steffen catches him off the line and just boots it. No, I'm gonna go with King Harrison Awful. I think King is extra motivated playing against what's his name, Kai, and gets his first goal of the campaign. And Crew win 4-0. Put a waxing on Vancouver, which again has conceded six goals this season, 9 for SKC. That's still twice as many as Crew have so far. So with that, we'll get anybody with any parting shots. We do want a quick plug for those of you who are talking about marketing. There is a way that you can help with marketing this Columbus Crew soccer team, and that's by partnering with our the Save the Crew spinoff, hashtag Fill the Fray. I know that they have a happy hour coming up this Thursday, I believe. I don't know if Ralph or Patrick, if you've got more information, or maybe Alex.
Keep talking. I'll pull it up here in a second.
Phil the Fray, ran by Nate Beckman and all those rascals over at Save the Crew. They're working hard to get tickets sold to these games, doing some more targeted marketing, but also just going out there and selling and buying advertisements.
It's so, Thursday, 6 to 9 p.m., Average Joe's Pub and Grill. So check it out.
Do it.
Which Average Joe's? I'll take you.
Polaris.
The one on Sanctus, right?
Yep. 10-4. Plug for me. I had a lot of fans come up to me after the game, after a 3-1 victory, to get on the fan post-game show. Having a blast doing that.
Oh, you mean the GCG Bag post-game show rip-off show?
Not the place to bring this up, Ralph.
There has been a discussion of having me and Drunken Cruiser having a crossover. The two universes colliding.
Oh, make that a meme.
But no, if you guys want to talk to me, usually find me roaming around on the grounds of Moffray Stadium at the end of the game. Usually I'll be in various locations. Come on up to talk to me. I'm really personable. I had two brothers come up and talk to me. Got a great group of fans. They were talking to me at the end of the game. Definitely would love to talk to you, learn about your story, learn about why you love Crew SC. And we'll just talk about the game and have a good time.
That's right. You too can talk to Ralph Schedell. It don't have to just be a podcaster. It's just regular fans like you can too. Now check it out. Great. It's always great stuff. Enjoy watching Ralph's interviews post game with fans.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm actually getting a lot of quality laughs, and you know, just the people that I've talked to are just a joy. So it's been really great to get out and interact with the fan culture and talk to a lot of folks that I otherwise normally am, you know, roaming around the field or hanging out in the press box or something like that. I don't get to associate with, but
you don't get to hang out in the press box. You're a photographer.
I'm a photojournalist. Thank you very much. But
yeah, that's not a thing.
But yeah, it's great. We're working on upgrading the equipment. I've actually got a little bit of a light for the day games, which I won't need to get. I don't know why I ordered it so soon, but I won't need it for Saturday. But so yeah, we're upgrading the equipment and trying to improve the quality over that other post game show out there.
The Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls post game show with Drunken Cruiser. I think that's the one you were
also entertaining,
about.
Also worth watching.
Absolutely,
it is.
We they are not mutually exclusive. Everyone should enjoy them and consume all the Crew supporter content that you can. Patrick, Alex, anything else you guys want to plug?
No.
All right.
What a build-up.
That will do it for this. We will quick plug to our great sponsors at Old North Arcade. Hit them up. Go to oldnortharcade.com. We'll catch those. We still need to do a live episode there one of these times. We'll get that together this season. But for all our colleagues here, this is Bart saying bye.
I have something.
We'll see. Oh, wait. Alex has something.
One more thing. So yes. I actually do have a plug.
Oh,
Alex Fisher has joined Twitter, the guy I was talking about earlier, head of the Columbus Partnership, president and CEO of the Columbus Partnership. Go follow him on Twitter, at Alex Fisher, last name spelled F-I-S-C-H-E-R, C-Bus. Alex Fisher, C-Bus, all one word. Go follow him on Twitter.
He's got great glasses. Yep. Great glasses.
And a Tim May-like southern accent.
Oh, yeah. Hey, he's a Tennessee boy.
Let me tell you what. Was he really stirring the drink in the Columbus business market?
Let's get out of here.
Okay. Yeah, all right. With that southern accent, we'll call it a night. Bye, buddies.
Oh, that's pretty dang cool.